Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. We're very excited about today's program because we're going to learn a lot about drones and their impact on Central New York. So I'm very pleased to be able to introduce our speakers today, Major General Mark Gibson, United States Air Force retired, is the new Chief Executive Officer of New Air Alliance. New Air Alliance is an organizational partner of Center State CEO and manages one of seven unmanned aircraft systems test sites in the country. General Gibson most recently served as Senior Advisor on Unmanned Aircraft Systems, known as UAS, integration into the Deputy Administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration. He began at New Air in November and will manage the organization's efforts to safely integrate UAS into the National Airspace System. This includes oversight of UAS testing being conducted in New York, Massachusetts, and Michigan, and a $30 million investment by New York State to develop a 50-mile flight traffic management system between Syracuse and Griffith Air Force Airport in Rome. General Gibson previously served as executive director of the Next Gen Institute, which provides professional services to the UAS Joint Program Development Office. He has also owned his own aviation consulting firm. He retired from the U.S. Air Force in 2011 after 33 years of service, holding numerous senior command and staff positions, earning him the rank of Major General. General Gibson earned a bachelor's degree in economics and management from the United States Air Force Academy. He also received a master's degree in business administration from the University of Northern Colorado and a master's degree in national security affairs from the National War College. He completed a national security fellowship with Syracuse University and trained in Lean Six Sigma management through the University of Tennessee. Craig Marcinkowski is the vice co-founder and director of strategy for Gryphon Sensors, which is an SRC company. Gryphon develops commercial sensor systems for the safe integration of unmanned aircraft systems into the National Airspace System. The company leverages 60 years of SRC's proven expertise in radar and electronic surveillance sensor research and development. Craig is responsible for developing the company's product and market strategies, forming domestic and international partnerships, and business capture in the UAS market. He also serves as an officer on the Commercial Drone Alliance Board of Directors. Craig founded Project USAFE, a world-leading safe UAS integration program that the state of New York has committed $250 million to over the next 5 years. Prior to Gryphon Sensors, Craig was a business development manager for SRC, where he led international business development. He began his career at Lockheed Martin as a software engineer before serving as a program and capture manager. He holds an MBA and a bachelor's degree in computer engineering from Binghamton University. Please join me in welcoming today's guests.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here today. Honored to be up here with General Hoot Gibson, great addition to the area, moving up here from Washington to lead a bunch of these initiatives that I'm going to talk about here. And then he's going to talk about his vision going forward for the region around unmanned systems. It's a really excited time and space to be part of this industry here in Central New York. The slide up here, Project USAFE, you may have heard or not heard about this. It's part of the whole Upstate Revitalization Initiative effort here in Central New York around unmanned systems. And I think most people heard about the Upstate Revitalization Initiative, show of hands. Okay. And unmanned systems was the signature initiative around that. That was one of those $500 million awards from the governor in upstate New York. And there were seven areas as part of the Central New York proposal, and unmanned systems was the signature initiative within there. And this picture lightly depicts it, but the future is coming rather soon here, with drones being all around us in our national airspace system. And what we're doing here in Central New York is really proving out a way to do that safely and securely so we can scale that. So when you look out the door, you do have that Amazon drone coming to your door, but you don't even think twice because you know it's being done safely and securely in a bunch of other applications that your mind can really run wild with for the use of unmanned systems. Just a couple definitions up front. We've been working with NASA, the FAA, and others. We love acronyms. So Project USAFE stands for UAS Secure Autonomous Flight Environment. UTM stands for UAS Traffic Management. You can see there's a little NASA logo up there next to that. They've been doing a lot of the advanced research in low altitude unmanned system routing and types of things. You've heard of traditional air traffic management. Every day you fly, you're in the normal ATM system. NASA's been studying low altitude UTM, and that's what we're focused on with Project USAFE, and we've been collaborating with NASA on that for over 4 years now. NUSTAR stands for National UAS Standardized Test and Rating. This is basically a facility where you test and performance benchmark drones. Also another NASA-led effort that we're bringing here to the region and funding with the governor's money under the Upstate Revitalization Initiative. So top level, once again, Project USAFE is two main concepts from NASA, UAS Traffic Management and NUSTAR. And under this overarching program that the governor's funded, we're validating a 50-mile UTM corridor. So what does that mean? So basically between Syracuse, New York, and Rome, out where we have one of the six FAA test sites in the country, and the FAA set up these test sites to do advanced R&D testing to be able to say, hey, we can safely fly drones here, validate their performance. We're establishing a corridor between those two municipality regions where we're going to enable beyond visual line of sight flying. And that's really what's missing right now in the industry, the ability to fly safely beyond visual line of sight. And this is going to be the first one of these corridors established anywhere in the world. And we're starting out at the test site where we're already doing testing and we're going to prove it safe. And that's why the FAA logo is up here here as well. The FAA is a key partner here. They own the airspace. They're the regulator. So as we begin to validate our performance out at the test range and move closer to Syracuse, hopefully beginning to fly over people eventually. We're not doing that yet. We need to prove everything that we're doing is safe and secure first. We'll build safety cases with the FAA, and they're going to, at the end of the day, be the ones that approve and validate our systems. Other things we're doing within the corridor, we're going to be protecting critical infrastructure, whether that's airports, prisons, or other areas where you want to make sure that you don't have drones. We want to make sure we can prove that we can keep drones out of areas where we don't want them before we let them fly most places. And NUSTAR, once again, this facility here that we're going to be constructing and building, it's almost like an underwriter's labs for drones. It's a mock indoor city where you can test drones for a variety of environmental conditions, whether it's fog, sand, wind, dust, GPS denied environment. And you can basically, you'll come out with a rating for your drone. And then you're going to know where in this UTM system, ecosystem here, whether you're out doing agricultural inspection, or if you're doing package delivery, or if you're doing a search and rescue operation, you'll know what type of drone you need for that mission and what it's been qualified to do. So all of these right now are research efforts that have been led by NASA. And I think that's one of the key things we're doing here in the area. We're partnering with NASA. We're taking the research that they've done, and we're going to build a 50-mile corridor. We're going to validate it with the FAA. We're going to build NUSTAR to performance validate the craft that go into this UTM system. And we're going to do real-world implementations on NASA's research and validate it with the FAA. I think that's a really powerful model, and that's a model that the governor's office was happy to get behind with this upstate revitalization funding. And why were we able to put this type of project together here in Central New York? Why aren't there other areas that are building a 50-mile UTM corridor? Why aren't there other areas that are working on NUSTAR? There's lots of areas in the country doing UAS research, but they haven't received the type of financial commitment that we have. And part of the reason we were able to get that is we were building off a lot of assets we've already have here in the region, whether it's the test site, which General Gibson is part of running with New Air, and he's going to get into more of the details. There's a lot that's been happening there for the last 5 years now around unmanned systems, one of six in the country. We have legacy companies in aerospace and in defense, and also traditional air traffic management, whether it's Saab Census, SRC, Lockheed Martin, and Heritage General Electric. Many academic institutions in this area as well, contributing in this area. We have the 174th Fighter Wing, and we've always had this high-level support from FAA, NASA, DOT, and this whole UTM community that NASA's built. So building off of these assets, and then with the funding that the governor's given us, the region is really in a world-leading position around unmanned systems. The URI process was interesting, and the first time I've ever had the chance to be part of something like that. It was about a year-long process putting that proposal together, and it was pretty amazing when Central New York was one of the three awardees, and I haven't seen it publicized too much, but CNY actually won the best plan. There were three plans that were awarded URI $500 million awards, but out of the seven submissions, the Central New York plan was the leading plan, with Project USAFE as a signature initiative. And once again, that's a commitment over 5 years towards the safe integration of unmanned systems into the national airspace system. So where are we today? This is one of the other, I think, unique things. There's a bunch of areas in the country talking about doing unmanned systems work. Maybe we'll get some funding. Maybe we'll do a pilot program around UTM. Phase one of Project USAFE has already been completed. We've been up and running for a year here. We've done initial implementation and architecture of the corridor. We've constructed and built a mobile UTM system, and we've also demonstrated critical infrastructure protection capability. And this was all capstone an event on September 28th out at Griffiths International Airport with the governor here for a live demonstration of the capabilities that have already been installed out there. Also on the New Star side, once again, that mock indoor city where we test and performance validate drones, that facility's not built yet. We're still coming up with the specs for what that system will look like, but there is an interim capability that's already been established up at Syracuse University, and I've got a slide coming up here to show you the type of testing they're already doing as part of this interim New Star capability. There's a national advisory committee that's been formed. This is made up of government entities, and also academics that are leading in their fields for the type of testing that we're going to be doing. And there's been an RFI release for public-private partnership for collaboration on that New Star facility. Once again, this has all been completed. This has all happened over the last year, and once again, really puts Central New York, Mohawk Valley, upstate New York in a really strong position around unmanned systems today and for the foreseeable future. This is just a picture from the capstone demo day that I talked about. That was September 28th out at Griffiths. We did three live demonstrations of the instrumentation that's already around Griffiths. And just a little detail, not to get too technical, on what they have out there, which is unique. Traditionally, when you're the instrumentation around airports or around the country, whether it's air traffic or air defense radars, they're instrumented to see large craft, usually above 2,000 feet. And with drones and unmanned systems, we're looking at low altitudes, smaller craft. And that air picture is really missing at this point. And there's a bunch of local companies here who specialize in that space, seeing these low, slow-flying objects. And the instrumentation that's been installed around Griffiths allows you to see small drones and planes in those areas. And we did three UTM demonstrations out there live for the governor, which is not trivial. And they all went off really well. It was quite a successful day. And one thing we mentioned, which is not a stretch, so this is the Griffiths International Airport out there. The instrumentation around that airport to detect and track drones is by far the leading instrumentation of any airport in the world for that problem. So their ability to detect and track drones around that airport out there is world-leading today. This is just an idea or a depiction of the low-altitude radar coverage that is around that airport right now. This is the beginning of that 50-mile corridor that we talked about. And these concentric circle rings here, this is basically just radar profiles. And you can see how there's some little gaps here. This is radar only sees line of sight. So maybe there's some hills or other things here, and that's why you try to do overlapping, redundant coverage. But in these areas here, this is where we can already begin flying and testing and tracking drones reliably. And this is the type of information the FAA wants to see when you're going to ask for waivers to be able to fly beyond visual line of sight. Right now, you can't fly beyond visual line of sight without a bunch of different waivers and exceptions put in there. Usually you need ground observers, people looking up and saying, I see the drone. We're going to take the ground observers out of the equation and be able to fly beyond visual line of sight based on radar data or other technology. So that's a big leap and a big step for what we're doing here in the region. And there's no other area in the country, and I would probably argue the world, that has that type of low-altitude air picture that we have out there in, at Griffiths International Airport right now.
Question?
Yes?
Is that the full 50-mile corridor? Is that where the corridor is running?
No, I'm sorry. And you can see, just for reference, here's Utica, here's Rome. This is a very small section of the corridor, but it was a start in phase one. Phase two, which is actually going to be completed over about the next year and a half, and Hoot will talk a little bit more about that, that's going to complete it all the way from Rome to Syracuse. But this is a start, and what we have here is already world-leading. Talked about a mobile UTM capability. This system has already been built on phase one. It was part of the September 28th demonstration for the governor. And back to your question there, sir. Yeah, is the whole corridor built? No, that'll go way out here. But with this mobile system, you could take it at different places in the corridor and give yourself a smaller footprint. One of those circles here is basically one radar's worth of coverage. We have a radar up on top of this mobile system, and I can see a general aviation aircraft out to about 27 kilometers, and it can see a very small DJI Phantom-sized drone out to 10 kilometers. So one of the examples of a mission that we're going to be validating with this is a search and rescue mission. So maybe there's a flood scenario, and you bring your mobile UTM system out, you set it up, you put the mast up, you validate that you have communications, and you clear the airspace with your radar. And you're connected back to a UTM client, maybe it's NASA's, maybe it's someone else's, and you can conduct your mission safely beyond visual line of sight with authority from the FAA. You will have already proven and validated all this out. But basically, you can conduct your mission beyond visual line of sight. Maybe it's, you know, you're covering a 10-mile area or whatever you have coverage to fly. Maybe it's a couple hours. You land your craft, you pack up, and you're on to your next scenario. But we really see this as a capability that most municipalities down the line may want if they're going to actually go out and fly their own drones beyond visual line of sight and they don't have a full-up UTM corridor, or maybe their corridor is not operational that day. We really see this as a critical asset to be able to deploy drones beyond visual line of sight safely. And once again, for some of the leading things we're doing here, this is the only mobile UTM system that we're aware of. It's not a concept. It's been built. It was already demonstrated, and we'll be validating it more in the corridor over the next couple of years. This is just the inside, the command center. Once again, fully integrated, everything operational. And the new STAR capability we talked of, switching gears. So with this, most of the talk so far has been about the corridor. New STAR is such an instrumental piece, and really I don't hear any other regions talking about this. I hear a lot of regions talking about UTM. But New STAR is such an enabling piece to get to that fully autonomous flight environment. So don't want to get too in the weeds, but if you picture the 5 years from now, which will hopefully be, you know, the goal with the end of this program from the governor's perspective, we'll have many drones in the airspace at the same time flying autonomously. That's without one-to-one controller. It'll be being controlled probably semi-autonomously. Maybe there'll be somebody at a control station looking at lots of them. If there's an issue, then they can take over. But pretty much they're flying autonomously, and they're doing it beyond visual line of sight. For those drones to be able to be in that environment, they all have to be rated. They all have to know about the ratings of each other, so they know how to interact with each other. And really, the only way to do that is to standardly test and performance benchmark them independently in some type of facility. Drones that are coming out today, they're built by manufacturers. They don't have really any standards they're being built to across the industry. If one manufacturer says my battery life is 12 hours, is that in Alaska? Is that in Florida? What happens when it's in certain kind of wind? Who tested it? Who validated it? There's really no independent third party doing that yet. And that's really the whole role of New STAR. This is an independent third party, sets the performance benchmarks, test your drone, and then if you want to plug into UTM, you'll go in with some New STAR rating. We talked about an interim capability that Syracuse University has already established. They're testing basic parameters right now that the FAA identified in some recent rulemaking for flying over people. One of those is basic drop testing. You know, what's the impact assessment when a drone, if there's a failure, falls out of the sky? How much impact is there? And there's a number of ways to test that. You can do a standard drop test like you see up here. And they've come up with some more innovative ways to test some of the sled testing with these crash test dummies, where you can do much more repeatable common testing. And once again, one of the goals of this new STAR facility is to come up with repeatable ways to consistently test. So there'll be lots of different drones coming through here all the time. What's the regular, repeatable way to test them in a reliable and standardized method? So this has been courtesy of Dr. Mark Lauger up at Syracuse University. He's done a great job with the students in the lab up there, and there's other tests that they're performing as well on the cyber side of drones, because basically we've got to be able to make sure we can validate cyber immunity, cyber vulnerabilities of drones as well, especially if they're going to be flying over people in sensitive areas. Back in 2016, we hosted the UTM convention here in Central New York. There was over 700 aviation experts, 13 different countries, all came to Central New York, election week in November. First-time conference. It was pretty amazing to the people we had there. There was over 100 speakers. I see Jane Amico in the back from Center State CEO. She did the lion's share pulling that conference together. It was really, really quite amazing. And when the first day, actually, there was a large demonstration out of Griffiths International Airport, too, where they were doing a bunch of different unmanned systems demonstrations. That's Lockheed Martin K-MAX helicopter there. I believe there was up to 500 people out of Griffiths. So it was really a successful convention. And at that convention, the governor announced the next tranche of funding, if you will, within the URI Project USAFE. And that was for completion of the 50-mile corridor. And that's what we're calling phase two of Project USAFE. It may be a little hard to see the red line, but drawing over it here, we've got Syracuse here. Corridor is going to be coming out past Baldwinsville. And this is notional right now still, out past Utica, you know, encompassing all of Oneida Lake as well. And, you know, the vision here is this will be this place where we'll be able to safely test, performance validate, but also this will become commercially operational. And that's really key. There's a lot of places doing testing. They won't have anywhere near the instrumentation or coverage we have, but they might only be doing testing. We're going to commercialize this, and we're going to be conducting business here. And this is one of the goals of economic development that the governor put towards this. We want companies that are developing products or actually wanting to start businesses around them locating here to the corridor. We've established something called the Drone Innovation Zone, and there's probably going to be a couple of them, one in Syracuse and one out in Rome, where small UAS companies, incubator space, can come and get together and collaborate on these types of projects. We have Genius New York, which is in its second year now, the largest unmanned systems incubator in the world. $5 million last year, $5 million this year has been committed by the governor. Well, after this year's cohort, we'll have 12 companies who've already located here to the region, and we have a couple that were local companies, but, you know, 12 within the region unmanned systems companies. And with the full implementation of this corridor, we anticipate many more companies coming here to our region, Central New York and Mohawk Valley, to conduct business here, because it's really a UAS hub globally. We talked about the initial corridor is already operational out at the September event. And the goal, once again, 50-mile instrumented corridor. And we're looking to validate, at least within the next couple of years, 7 beyond visual line of sight use cases within this corridor. And not to get too technical, but one of the unique things we're doing here for BVLOS, beyond visual line of sight flying, we're doing it without, the goal will be to do it without ground observers, without chase planes, to do it in a, do it with technology, do it in a way that's scalable, and do it in a way that's really going to allow business to come here to conduct business. So I wanted to end here, because this is a perfect handoff to Hoot. The governor came here in 2016 to announce tremendous amount of funding for completion of the corridor. When that happened, it was really a signal to the industry that things are happening in upstate New York. They'd heard about Project USAFE. They saw things happening. When they all came here to this region, heard from the governor the commitment, New Air really kicked it into gear and said, we're going to bring in some more leadership to help take this to the next level. And they went out and found the best in the business, General Hoot Gibson. He's been the head of UAS integration at the FAA for the last couple of years. And it's amazing what he's done within the FAA. When I started doing a bunch of this UAS work, probably about 3.5, 4 years ago now, I'd go to all these conferences and I was really starting to learn the UAS space, and all people did was bash the FAA. Oh, they're not letting us do this, they're not letting us do that, they're not cooperative, they're not collaborative. Who came in 2.5 years ago to the FAA? And it's just been amazing the type of culture shift that's been there. It's been shifting from not helping to how can we collaborate. A lot of this project here, under Hoot's guidance and Hoot's leadership within the FAA, they started collaborating with us 3 years ago, and the governor saw that the FAA was going to cooperate and collaborate with us, and that was one of the reasons why the governor agreed to fund this program. NASA and the FAA were both on board. It's been amazing what you've done with the whole FAA and the industry, and then getting to come up here and lead what's going on here. We're really honored, and I want to hand it off to General Hoot Gibson.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Craig. And Craig and I have become fast friends over the last year and a half, I guess, or so, maybe 2 years. We see each other at all the conferences, and I know he came by my office several times. So it's a pleasure getting around with folks and friends that I've gotten to know. I want to thank Eileen for the introduction. I leaned over to Craig, and I said, someday I got to meet that guy. A couple of basic things. I'm now completing my third week as the new CEO, as Craig said. I think some of the things I hope to bring is just the fact that I've been working at the highest levels of the FAA for the last 2 years, and not just within 10A, which has been an incomparable experience, not necessarily good, but it has been gives me keen insights, I think, on how we move forward. The other piece of that was the industry involvement over conferences and folks coming to me. I was part of that outlet to listen to their concerns and complaints, and it gave me has given me a leg up since I know most of them now personally, and I think we're seeing that in the IPP program, which I'll touch on here briefly. Who we are, I'm still learning that. Clearly, it's almost 200, I think, companies that are allied with us. I plan to pull on that string pretty hard. In the end, it was made clear to me that besides the technology and all the interesting things we're doing, this is about revitalizing upstate New York and bringing that technology and jobs and expertise here. So that'll never be lost on me. I just want to go through a couple things where we're at. Again, approaching the end of my third week, so it's not totally comprehensive. We had our first strategy meeting, frankly, yesterday, and there was a little bit of hair pulling and eye poking, shall we say. So they've learned to deal with the fighter pilot, at least a little bit. So, and then what we see on the horizon, and I then we'll turn it over for Q&A. Slide. Again, 200 partners. I'm going to, over time, the plan is to meet with them. And then we also, when the test site was established, Michigan and Massachusetts paired with us. And I'm still waiting to talk to Michigan, but Jeff DiCarlo, who is a DOT at Massachusetts, sits on our board, and I've already had several conversations with him about this next project that we're working on and how we're going to partner on that as it goes forward. Again, some of the things in the sense of priorities, some of you are familiar with Maslow. I kind of throw this into the Maslow level. First of all, we're in a very temporary condition in our office, so you know, job one was, okay, let's see if we can't find a appropriate place to represent New Air to the community and to the industry when they come to visit and make sure that it's a good working environment. Anybody that knows of those kind of things, please approach me and we'll take that up. I know Rob Simpson, most of you know, would like to see us downtown, and I don't have a problem with that, but we're hopefully going to be in New Digs by the end of January, first part of February. New hires. The $30 million, $30 million grant that Craig alluded to, first of all, I want to dissuade the thought that I'm walking around now with $30 million in my pocket. It's a grant, and it's essentially a reimbursable grant, so which means we don't give you taxpayers' dollars until you show us how you're going to use it and that you used it, and then we'll reimburse it. We're working on how to finalize our line of credit so that we can proceed and have some kind of cash flow to do the things we need to do, because that other reimbursement process will take some time, as you can imagine. In that grant, though, was the requirement to hire five permanent employees. We have a great team. Most of them have been puddling along since the beginning that the test site was established. There's really only one permanent employee. The rest of them donate long time and hours. They're paid for it. But we're going to try to get some other folks. So in essence, I'm hire number one, and I've already got some ideas for the next folks to get on board. And again, I think by the spring, we'll have a different look, both where we're located and have some additional help. It was mentioned the integration program. Again, it's beneficial, I think, that I was in D.C. when this got started. And you could call it a White House program. It was driven through a presidential memorandum that we proceed. And it's a pilot program. So integration pilot program, now known as IPP. And they're coming out now asking for folks that think they can contribute in that environment. I thought it was important, even though it doesn't bring any funding, but it will bring notoriety, and it'll also help us partner with industry early on. I've already been on the phone. We've got companies like, as of yesterday, Amazon. I reached out to them. Amazon, Airbus, General Electric, some DGI, the largest manufacturer. We've got a lot of folks that are going to be joining our team. I think it'll be very powerful. And then we'll see how we turn that into meaningful research and eventually investments and opportunities for us here in the community. The first meeting at the White House, I represented DOT and FAA, and I thought it went very well. I was and am very excited about this program because I think it's going to apply a lot of pressure to FAA through the White House and through DOT to push hard and accept some informed risk, some limited risk, but to continue to push. Most of you can understand you're not going to innovate without taking some risk. And we've struggled with that. I shouldn't say we anymore. They've struggled with that at the FAA. To their credit, we've been flying for decades now. We don't think twice about putting our family and friends on airplanes and whether they're going to get to their destination. But to take that same group that's been doing that now for 20 and 30 years and ask them to take some risk and change, and we don't even understand this, you can imagine people have been pulling muscles trying to get out of the way. So this will be due this spring. I fully anticipate that we'll be at the front of the pack on that, and it's very exciting for all the opportunities it's going to open up. A piece of that, related to that, is our RFP, which Craig called USAFE. It's a UTM corridor. And we have a request for a proposal going out soon. There was about 10 respondents, I think, or teams that came up. And that's basically to build the infrastructure for the corridor, to help instrument it, to calibrate it, and establish it all the way out across the 50 miles phase two. And the IPP is separate but related in the sense that all those folks now are looking at the UTM corridor, our airspace, our funding and support from the local community and the state to be able to come up here and then operate on that. So we have two parallel but not exactly the same programs as we move forward. Finally, I suppose we didn't really give enough time for NASA. I mean, he talked about all the things we're doing with them. I'm very fortunate, and again, coming from D.C., I got to know all the key folks at the NASA headquarters, and over time, Parimal Kapardikar, also known as PK, who is kind of the father of UTM, I've known him now for almost 4 years, and knew that all this was going on up here, and when I was approached to come up and help lead it, I thought it was a fantastic opportunity, both for me and for the community and for NASA, frankly, that we all have worked now together, we all know each other, and we're all pulling on the rope the same way. There's also a piece in there, though, about beyond UTM, and that's where the integration really began. That was at the medium altitudes. DOD flew Reapers and Predators. You're all familiar with that. And I was actually in the Pentagon at that time as a two-star, started working with the FAA. Unfortunately, 12 years later, it's still about the same point, but that's another story. That we began to work, and that's where the integration efforts actually began, because we knew we were going to have bigger training areas. We were going to be able to have to transit outside restricted airspace, and that process has continued, even though I will tell you the low-altitude stuff has captured everybody's imagination and energy right now, and it also has captured folks like Google and Amazon, which bring a whole lot to that effort. So we're going to try to balance both ends of that. So that's kind of where we're at and where we're going very quickly, but I'm available for questions, and I'll stick around after if you want to approach me one-on-one. Thank you, Eileen.
I haven't asked a question here in a long time, but this is the one that's really bothering me. I'm very in favor of you being able to monitor the drones. How fast are you going to be able to tell an airplane pilot? What's going to happen in the areas where drones are flying all over the world and they can't see them? A flock of birds can get in the engine with no time. Somebody in the wrong hands could put something on a drone that would blow up a plane with 400 people on it. I'm scared to death to see these things sanctioned and flying basically all over the world.
Me too. Actually, that occupied all my days at the FAA. Having been a pilot, flown in the NAS all those years, you know, albeit military, I looked at it almost in my mind's eye all the time. Craig will tell you, I worked with Griffin and many others, what we called at the time counter UAS. I led the test. That went into Dallas-Fort Worth, that went into Denver, to look at how we would detect and eventually mitigate those concerns. I don't want to feed any uncertain optimism about things. There's a number of things, but it's not going to happen tomorrow, in the sense that we have to work with the control tower and have the pilots and security outside the what I call outside defense or outside the airport boundary. It's a complex problem, frankly, and we worked with MITRE to put together a concept of operations and how that might work. I've told everybody, for a year I was on the ground in Iraq, 2003 to 2004, and had to worry about four air bases that we operated out of and how to protect that. That was still a huge challenge when you own everybody. And when you say jump, they say how high. Now bring that into a civilian environment where tower controllers are a separate thing. Their union, you got to be careful about what you add to their work every day, plus just the fact that their job is to control aircraft, not get distracted with something else that might be an information feed. And then everybody that's really going to have an effect on that drone is probably going to be an outside agency, law enforcement. So how do you tie all that together, and how do you clearly define responsibilities is a real challenge. I will tell you a fundamental piece of that also, though, is remote identification. We are pushing for some kind of, they call it remote, I would call it electronic identification. We've had our first aviation rulemaking committee. We participated with all kinds of law enforcement, FBI, federal, as well as the industry. We sent out a paper, request for information. We got 42 papers back from companies, of which seven had viable capabilities today, what we'd call high TRL technical readiness levels. So that's in the mix. For a long time, I, as a pilot, argued with folks that you're not going to see these things, okay? You know, they go, well, we'll put lights on it and we'll do this. The first job is to segregate them as much as you can, hence the low altitude and don't operate around airports. The second piece, though, is put something on it that everyone can see electronically. ADS-B, which you may not know about, is an electronic network that we're building for traditional aviation. We're going to find a way to weave that in, that electronic identification, down to drones. That's the only way you're going to be able to keep track. All that said, that's the folks that will comply. You know, we never know from a nefarious thing who's not going to comply, either because they're knuckleheads or because they choose not to comply and they have nefarious intent. That part is still remains a significant challenge, and there are no easy solutions. All the easy answers have been taken, as I tell everybody, but DC is aware of that, the FAA is aware of that, DHS is aware of that, DOD is aware of that, Craig's aware of that. So that's, which is good support for Griffin. But it is something, we were going to have ops over people at one point, over a year ago. And be honest with you, the FBI came back and said no. And we have to always integrate everything in the interagency in DC, and they threw up the veto vote. Because they didn't feel they had the authorities. Title 18 of U.S. law says you cannot shoot down airplanes. It's called the Anti-Sabotage Act, which would be the mitigation piece. And you can't listen with RF because you may be eavesdropping. So how do we parse that out so we could hear the controllers the remote control and pick up that signal and know where it's at and apprehend the person if needed be. The Wiretap Act also had problems with what we were trying to do through, you know, through some of our defensive systems. So when they said we don't have the authorities and we don't have the tools to monitor that, not only at the federal level, but certainly the local levels, no. So we have been working very hard. They have been working very hard for over the last year to get at this problem, to give folks enough sense of security and public safety so that we can go forward with the industry. Because the other side of that coin is we don't want to lose this global leadership that we have right now to a global market and fall behind. So we're always going to sit on that balance between, you know, security and advancing the industry and all that it can bring. Most of you have seen that in Harvey and Irma and elsewhere. I can tell you it goes on day to day with law enforcement. It goes on day to day in search and rescue efforts, and it continues to grow. All the good things that we can do with this. So I don't know if that answered. I'm happy to talk with you afterwards if it didn't.
Good morning. My question goes to, this is obviously a major government, private industry collaboration, and the ultimate is to be commercial on this eventually. It would seem to me there's a lot of pieces of this that would be, I don't want to use the word classified or sensitive material as you're developing different things. How do you maintain control over that at the same time dispersing that information so you can get interplay and everything else? And my second part of the question goes, is this truly the only worldwide effort trying to go explore into this area in practical sense, or are there other places around the world that are also trying to do similar type things?
Great questions. Related to the first one, the amount of information that's out there, the public-private partnership, what could be classified or not, NASA's done a great job kind of laying a framework with UTM, this research on low-altitude UAS traffic management, and they've built this research framework, if you will, where they've created a lot of common interfaces where partner companies can bring technology, and as long as they talk that common interface, they can share data, they can keep their IP proprietary, and they can share only the data that's needed for those commercial operations. Then maybe if within that system, as you're doing surveillance, if there was certain classified things that needed to go back to other authorities, maybe they only get access to that information. So there's been NASA's really done a good job laying out a common framework for everyone to talk with common interfaces and common languages at a technical level. To your question on international, there's so much happening internationally here. ICAO up in Montreal just hosted a UTM day there back in September. People from all around the world, you know, they're coming to listen to what NASA and everybody's doing in the U.S. around UTM, but they're also presenting projects that they're doing. There's a big effort around UTM taking place in France right now. They've been kind of the center within Europe. There's a UTM corridor that's going in Japan. And, you know, stuff's taking off everywhere. When I mentioned the 50-mile corridor being world-leading, it definitely is from the size, scale, and scope. And we're a couple of years ahead, thanks to the funding we received from the governor's office early. But this stuff's happening everywhere. And to Hoot's point, you know, balancing out all the good from drones, the economic development, but also making sure national security, you know, is first and foremost. And even with the name of our program, Project USAFE, UAS Secure Autonomous Flight Environment, that was chosen very carefully in validating the security of that system first before you really are able to get to that autonomous flight environment. If you can't validate and assure the safety and security of the system, our partners at the FAA and other places aren't going to allow us to fly.
I'll just add that I'm used to dealing, obviously, in the classified environment, not so much in the proprietary environment, but as I've come over to this job and even with the FAA, we sign a lot of NDAs, non-disclosure agreements. We're aware that companies want to protect a good bit of their proprietary. Some of them have characteristics. Frankly, some more than others are very, very sensitive to it. Amazon is one that's very sensitive to it. But we'll find a way to protect that and still continue to collaborate. It is a challenge.
Hi, I would like to just go back to the funding side of this whole thing. The governor and New York State has put up a tremendous amount of initial funds to promote the development of this. But I wonder how much is there federal funding involved in, like, the RFP, the development of this whole corridor is part of that federally financed?
Craig will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the short answer is no. The test sites were legislated as a way to move forward. I can tell you the FAA was drugged to the altar on that. They still have not totally embraced it, although after 5 years, I think they're finally aware that they're not going away and that they bring a lot of expertise that they can lean on out in the field. But directly, there is no federal funding that I'm aware of, and I would hope to know that since I just left the FAA.
Yeah, spot on, Hoot. And once again, it's why we're in a leadership position here. You could see the funding in federal governments around the world and the U.S. I mean, we're starting with the IPP programs. There's not funding around them yet, but federal efforts are now really beginning to kick in around UTM and safe drone integration. I think you have to take your hats off to New York State for 3 years ago deciding to invest in this when UTM back then was much more of a gamble. I wouldn't say gamble because you already had NASA doing it. FAA was at the table. But it wasn't as prominent as it is now. Now it's like, oh, yeah, absolutely. State should definitely invest in that. 3 years ago, it was a really, a smart early investment by the state of New York, and it's really put us in a great position.
And that's not to say the FAA isn't spending money, but they're not spending money on that kind of stuff.
Thank you. Thanks for your presentation. I just have a question about once the corridor becomes commercially operational, as you described, who are the customers? What does the market look like for the businesses as they come into that corridor? I'm just curious if you have a sense of who those customers are, whether they're military, commercial, consumer. What does that look like?
Well, I'll give you my sense, and Craig's in that market more, has been longer than me. But as of late, with the IPP coming on board, I've noticed a bit of a sea state change, and I've talked to all of our staff and others. The companies that I've been able to talk to and come up and help us with the IPP or for us to provide that environment for them will do some testing, but a lot of them feel like, I think at this point, their leadership and the investors want to see that transition, albeit even in a minor way, to commercial operations. It's kind of like we're done investing. We know we can do it safely. Let's prove that. So a lot of them, I'll leave the names out, but have already said, I need to see where I can integrate it in upstate New York before I can convince my leadership to come in and set up. I believe, I'm happy to come up there, but can you help me find energy companies so we can fly the power lines for inspection? We need to start transitioning this now and making it more every day. And that's why I think the marriage, if you will, between New Air right now at that level and the economic development folks over at CEO and Empire State Development, ESD, is so important. So I'm telling them now, you come up for a day and we'll talk about the technology and the airspace and get that piece done. The second day, I'll turn you over to our economic development folks and they will introduce you to some companies that you can sit down and talk with. So we're on the cusp, especially on that kind of stuff. The pizza deliveries, that's, frankly, I think that's a decade away. But we will probably be doing stuff out on the periphery of Syracuse and some of these other communities to see, to learn more as we go on and to desensitize, frankly, the community to it. We're not gonna quite be there. I know when Google did the burritos at Virginia Tech, and then I had folks like Johns Hopkins coming and wanting to move blood to their pathology that was 2 miles away but took them hours. They wanted to fly. I came up with a clever thing, blood before burritos. So some of that stuff, I think folks, you'll be on the side of angels. You know, if you can do some of that stuff that could help people, just like it was in Harvey, then you'll accept a little bit greater risk than you will for a pizza, my guess.
Oh, that was great, Hoot. Some of the types of companies we've been involved with, and hopefully they'll come up and want to use the corridor, companies like BNSF, they're flying, and they don't have rail here, but other rail companies are flying drones over tracks to inspect them. Simple application and use case. I don't really know the rail industry, but we started to learn. I didn't realize they have to inspect every piece of track every day, and they drive a train over. It's a massive cost and throughput issue for them. And if they can just start flying drones, and at that point they could start flying them multiple times a day, collecting more data, it's much more cost efficient. Just one example, or cell phone tower inspection, bridge inspection, all these types of jobs that are actually dangerous. There's a number of deaths each year inspecting cell phone towers. The types of inspections they do along power lines with helicopters at certain times, very dangerous. Being able to do all those with drones, you know, that's low-hanging fruit. Like Hoot's saying, it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. It's not over people. Those will be things that happen sooner. The state of New York, DEC, troopers, and a bunch of those other groups, state users are going to want to be using drones as well. And then the, you know, more of the other commercial operations, deliveries, those things over people, that'll probably be a little further out.
And one other thing, you know, in my mind, we talk about these as aircraft, and that was FAA's decision with the Hill, frankly, years ago. But in some cases, I do think of them as aircraft, and they're, you know, unmanned goes all the way to UPS, FedEx is looking to transition their manned cockpits, not that far off, into unmanned or optionally manned. But also down to think of the insurance adjuster that's got to check the roof and all that. He just pulls up, gets the UAS out of his Pelican case as he would any other tool, flies it around and comes back. You talked about the inspections. Another big one is refineries, the stack inspections. They have to shut everything down to go up and do it as they currently do. Huge costs, millions of dollars to do that, as opposed to being able to fly one of these around and get even a better look at it as often as they need, frankly. So a great benefit coming from the tool aspect of UAS.
So there's this promise of thousands of jobs. What kinds of jobs are they? Is our local workforce prepared? Are we preparing our local workforce? What kinds of educational and training needs are there?
Just looking at some of the things that have been done here locally out at Mohawk Valley Community College, they've set up one of the first drone programs in the country there. Some of the things we're looking at here locally here in the city of Syracuse is what do we even do down at those levels as we move up into college from an education STEM standpoint, jobs programs up at community colleges. One of the genius companies that we funded last year here out of the first six, that was the Unmanned Systems Incubator, SkyOp. They're one of the largest training companies for unmanned systems in the country right now, and most of the curriculum they're developing has been for community colleges. They're also branching into four-year colleges. They're also looking at potentially what they can do down at the grade school level as well. So that's a company right here in central New York that's developing training material, and as part of this ecosystem for the types of jobs that are coming in, the types of companies that were funded in the first round of Genius. One of them is more on the inspection side. They're doing very unique algorithms for getting drones close to bridges and other things, you know, autonomously to be able to do that very close inspection. Another one is an application company for rooftop inspections. So there's all these niche markets. So every roofer that goes out there to get these surveys done of roofs, either they have to go out and walk it, and it takes all day. It takes a long time. This company, Easy3D, that we funded here, you know, they send the drone up. They do it in, you know, 30 minutes. They get everything they need. Boom, gets emailed right to the roofer. Saves them a ton of time, and the feedback they've been getting is awesome in the marketplace. So another growing company there. But there's application companies. There's surveillance companies. There's craft companies. Another one we funded is a startup called Scent Aerospace. Mechanical aerospace engineer twin brothers that went to Syracuse University. They moved out to Colorado, and then they were in Arizona when they applied to Genius New York. They developed a dual rotor drone that you can basically launch by hand. You could carry in a backpack. They sold 500 of them on Kickstarter to get their business going. They were just out at the commercial UAV Expo in Vegas. They were featured on their website there, and they're doing their next round of funding right now. They've got a great product that's being built right here in central New York from a craft standpoint. So this large ecosystem, whether it's applications, craft, surveillance technologies like who talked about, remote ID and tracking. We've got a lot of surveillance companies here in the area. Saab just moved their North American headquarters here to central New York. Big jobs boost there. Griffin Sensors, we're a startup. We went from 15 to 50 people over the last 3 years. And our parent company, SRC, in the UAS space is hiring 1,000 jobs over the next 5 years in this space. So those are just some examples of the jobs and the growth that are happening here. But with this corridor that's going in in the presidential pilot program and all the stuff that Hoot's leading, some of those big-name companies, you know, you don't want to talk for them, but and it's not like you need to throw a bunch of economic incentives at them. If we have unique airspace, they're going to want to be here to use this. That's pretty much been the strategy for the region there. So if we build something that's unique in a very unique environment, we're hoping a lot of people are going to want to come. And so far, we've already seen some fruits of the, you know, already being reaped from that, from the investments that have been made.
And as I mentioned before, I think, you know, recent reception we're at, I was talking to some of the other folks. I said, look, it's great that I know a lot of these industry leaders in this area, and I can convince them to come up here. As I told them, I can get them to the boat, but you're going to have to land them. And so I think that's where this partnering with the economic development folks and having it be so tight. Being in the FAA, I got to travel, obviously, and see everybody's act out there. But I will tell you, none of them are quite as focused the way we are here in upstate New York about the follow-on, the commercial opportunities and the development, the education programs, et cetera, as we are right here. So I think that's a big leg up right now.
Good morning. UAVs and other forms of remote sensing have been used for decades for various applications. Even I had some roofing bids lately, and they used remote sensing to give me those bids. They don't get up on roofs anymore. They can give you those bids using remote sensing. But it seems to me the real power of this technology is how it integrates with other forms of remote sensing and geographic information technologies. And I'm wondering, like GIS, GPS, we're all looking at maps on phones now. We're using images on phones. The integration of all of those into determining what's the best method to get to an application in a cost-effective way is really what the public sector is looking for, as well as the private sector. So I'm curious, what I've heard to date is a real concentrated focus on UAV technology, or drones as they've been recently called, but UAVs for decades. How do you see that coming together, and particularly how are you going to benefit civilian applications and local government in central New York, because of various reasons, economic, we won't get into it today, we are behind many other parts of the country in terms of the application and use and management of geographic information technology. How are you going to leverage that to help local governments here while you're bringing forth this into the future?
I'll let Craig talk to the technical side for sure, but if I understood the basis of your question, the last official thing I did in the FAA was kind of nice. But anyway, I went to Southern California for a large conference out there, but it was kind of a private level. And just being around that, it was apparent to me that I've told some folks this is like an industrial revolution in the sense that we're here talking about air today, but cars, we're pulling man out of all these kinds of operations of the vehicle, of the boat, of the car, of the rail. I mean, so this is a huge shift in our lifetime as far as how we turn towards more autonomous capabilities. The other piece that I see on the air side, which we haven't even touched on, but certainly the FAA is beginning to look at, is commercial space. They're talking 6 to 7 launches a week by next year. It's going to take a fully automated capability to touch all those variables. It's not going to be one guy controlling one aircraft anymore, because you have debris fallout, potential debris fields, and all that other stuff that has to be calculated, and the impact on everything above and below that. So we're heading towards a broadly autonomous use. Back to the communities and all that, I will note in the IPP up here, everybody liked to talk about the technology in airspace. And again, I had this discussion at the White House in the first meeting. The lead applicant has to be a public entity. In other words, it has to be the communities. We're going to look at technology and airspace, but we're also going to look hard at all the governance. How do you arrive at management decisions of limiting aircraft at night and where they can fly and that kind of thing? My view is that at some level, 200 feet below, maybe even higher than that, communities ought to have a say because of public safety. The law enforcement guys will tell you, I don't enforce federal laws, but I enforce local ordinances and local laws. And so how does the community get involved to have a say in that regulatory piece? And, of course, now the industry has to realize that's their market, so they have to approach the folks in an unthreatening way. And I think foundational to all of it, I've been saying it for over a decade, is education. I think when people finally understand the benefits and balance that with the potential risk, they quickly begin to get on board. So that's my pitch anyway.
No, I thought that was great, Hoot, and I think the IPP is a perfect avenue there, along with what we're doing with the corridor. We're going to have to integrate in with local municipalities if you're really going to be integrating craft at low altitudes? How do you even start putting, you know, whether it's with local law enforcement or other first responders, how do you say we don't want people flying over this field at this time? Maybe there's a three-hour window, or maybe other ordinances at night. There's going to have to be collaboration there, and that will be through that UTM platform. So that's where a lot of those technologies could potentially, that could be an insertion point for getting them into other places within municipalities.
I want to thank both of you for spending time with us this morning. We truly appreciate it. It was a great program. Thank you.